This is World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris. On her third full-length album, called A Southern Gothic, Adia Victoria has emerged as a songwriter who is uniquely capable of communicating nuance and atmosphere. On the album, she explores her relationship to the South, where she was born in South Carolina, and where she still lives in Nashville, and she explores the South's relationship with her as a Black woman. It's a record full of love, anger, and, in her words, some creepy grooves. Coming up, she'll perform songs from the album, she'll get into working with T-Bone Burnett, who executive produced the record, and she'll talk about the way they captured the feeling of intense heat in the sound of her music. Oh, and you might also hear kittens meowing in the background, because she has a whole litter of them at home. So it's intensity and kittens. Our conversation in just a minute, but we begin with Adia Victoria performing live from her new album, This Is Whole World Knows.
On a Sunday afternoon, while her daddy shares that good news under the steeple, she laying in his deville, watching her blood rise as it fills up that needle. Hell and heaven in her arm, got her mother spinning yarn to all God's people. And as quiet as she's kept, your body will feel, yeah, the whole world knows. Most anyone could see that there was trouble. And to her family's dismay, where they lead her, she would stray, she would struggle. She showed up strung out and serene at a surprise with 16, not even humble. Took a bite out. Say one word of grace, the whole world knows.
Adia Victoria performing Whole World Knows. That's from her new album, A Southern Gothic. I'm so happy to have Adia Victoria as my guest today. Adia, welcome back to the World Cafe.
Thank you, Rena. I feel like it's a welcome back to the world.
Yeah, I know. I wish we could be doing this in person. We're still on video chat right now, but it's still exciting. It's so nice to actually get to talk to you face to face, because I feel like we've been like Twitter mutual followers for a long time. So I was very excited to actually get to speak with you today.
Yeah. Have we? No, we've never met.
I don't think we've ever met in real life. I know. It feels like we have.
Yeah. I feel like the internet's starting to do that weird thing where it's like, yeah. I know you online. Do I know you IRL? It's
like, I feel like after this year, that's like a very normal feeling.
Yeah. And I keep thinking it's 2019 or 2020. I don't know. Time
no longer matters.
Who's who?
Speaking of Twitter, I wanted to mention there is a pinned tweet at the top of your Twitter account right now, and it's so great. You posted 11 years ago, I rolled into Nashville on a Greyhound, listening to the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou via a portable CD player. I decided then and there that one day I'd make a record produced by T-Bone Burnett. A decade later, that album, A Southern Gothic, drops. Now, to be clear,
yes,
you and your creative partner, Mason Hickman, co-produced this new album, but it was executive produced by T-Bone Burnett. So you did it. Congratulations.
Did it. Yeah. You know, I thought about that moment of arriving in Nashville on the Greyhound, and I had been listening to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and I'd also listened to the work that he'd done with Gillian Welsh, who's another, a personal Jesus of mine. And I was like, man, I love this man's production. I love the way he makes the South sound. I love the way he makes story sound. And so he was definitely someone who was like, I at least have to meet him, but I would love to make art with him. And we actually met each other in 2019. Collaborating on, I was providing some poetry for a project that he was working on. And we just hit it off. Like, we were just like these two weird Southern eccentrics. Like, we met at a Starbucks on Charlotte, and he showed up wearing like this black, like Undertaker looking tuxedo suit with a white shirt. And I had on like a white shirt and a, like an Art Deco black jacket and a long black skirt. We're just like, all right, let's go convert some people.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. He's just become over the course of quarantine, just one of my buddies, like one of my dudes that I've been blessed to cross paths with in this strange way. And we've just gotten really close, and he's got great dogs. His wife, Kelly, is divine, and he's just real chill. He's cool.
Maybe you could point to one of the tracks, either from the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack or a Gillian Welsh song, where you really could hear what you loved about T-Bone's production, something that he did really well that you were like, I want this in my own music.
It was the cover of Chris Thomas King's cover of Skip James' Hard Time Killing Floor. And that was the first time I come across Skip James's work. And just the sound of like the cicadas, that ambient summer sound, that a sound that feels like heat. And that felt so intimate to me growing up in South Carolina, because the heat kind of just holds you, and it has this backdrop of ambient sound. Like, you hear the cicadas, you hear the crickets, you just hear the wind and the pine trees. And listening to that track, I was like, this is someone who understands the South. And listening to Chris Thomas King's cover, it led me into finding Skip James. So, and that changed my life.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of that right now so we can hear what you're talking about. Hard Time Killing Floor Blues, Chris Thomas King.
Hard time, yeah, every way you go, has it harder than ever been before. And the people are drifting from door to door. Can't find no heaven, I don't care where they go.
So that was Chris Thomas King covering Skip James' Hard Time Killing Floor Blues. It's from the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack, produced by T-Bone Burnett. T-Bone Burnett executive produced my guest today's new album, A Southern Gothic. I'm talking to Adia Victoria. So you'd anticipated working with T-Bone for a long time. You finally get to do it. What was it like?
You know, it was an interesting, I feel like an onlyest kind of experience, because this was a record that we were collaborating on over the course of quarantine. But what I loved about T-Bone is, you know, he would ask me, what do you need from me? He's like, I'm not going to sit here and try and hold your hand while you write. Like, you know what you're doing. Because I was very clear when I started working with him. I was like, I've really been listening to like the Alan Lomax Field recordings. And I was like, I have the bass, like the rhythm, the groove of this. I wanted this record to sound like I made it out of like the dirt and the clay and the rocks and the sea and the South, because we didn't have our band because of quarantine. And so I had to get creative. And he was just like, I think you need to honor this process that you're on. And, you know, I'm here to give you feedback if you want it, if you need it, but I want to see where you're going with this. So he was very trusting and very open. And plus I was honest with him. I was like, look, man, I'm not trying to like stress over a record right now. Like I'm in a play. I'm working at Amazon. I'm trying not to kill my mom with this disease. Like we need to keep this like super organic. And he was down for that.
Could you maybe pick a spot on your album where you feel like you like captured that energy that you were looking for?
Man, I feel like it's a track, Mean-Hearted Woman. I started writing that song in January of 2020 when I was in Paris, when I was doing a lot of writing for this record. And I was working with some of my collaborators over there, Marcello Giuliani, he's a musician, bassist, producer, and Stone Jack Jones, who's another Southern-based artist. And I went into the studio with Cello and Jack, and I was like, I wrote this really creepy song, and I dig it. And it was instantly like, it was just one of those songs at the end of the session. You're like, that's something special. And we took it back to T-Bone, and he was listening to it, and he was just like, he's like, I honestly, he's like, what I would do is I would bring up the drums. So he started bringing up the toms as the song progressed. And you don't even notice it until it's like, oh my God, like it sounded like those toms were like stalking me through the woods. And they just suddenly became this big life affirming, like reverberating presence, like just the way that he was able to just know how to guide the song along to match the story, to enhance the story. And the song, the instruments, you know, while he was mixing them with his engineer, Rachel Moore, I was like, I want the instruments to have a personality. Like there's not a lot going on here. This is a very roots record, but we need to throw some dirt on this. So he definitely helped me throw some dirt on this record.
We're going to hear you perform Mean-Hearted Woman live in a minute, but first let's hear some of the album tracks so we can really capture that.
Sure.
This is Mean-Hearted Woman from Adia Victoria. Cafe, that was a bit of the album cut of Mean-Hearted Woman from Adia Victoria's new album, A Southern Gothic. You started writing that song in Paris. You started working on that. In Paris, not necessarily where I would expect someone to write an album called A Southern Gothic. So how did that first phase of working on the album in Paris shape what the album ended up being?
I feel like sometimes you get a different sense of clarity or perspective when you leave your home to examine it. And Paris for me has always been, since I was 18, I started traveling there. Paris has always been a place where I can sit inside my head real good. Just sit and let the world flow by. Like I like to walk and just be with myself in a different way than I can be in Nashville. I just use a different part of my brain there. And I'd bought over to Paris with me a whole bunch of books. I'd bought Eudora Welty short stories. I bought some Michael Kraling, who writes pretty prolifically on the South. I bought books about the way that Southern memory is formed and public memory and private Southern memory. So I was surrounding myself with the South, but I was apart from it that I could have some space to write. And I don't know, I think it was just something bloomed inside of me that time period. I also think I caught COVID while I was there because I was struggling for about 3 weeks. So I was kind of in and out of fevers like the whole time, just sweating, but having these conversations with like different parts of myself while I was like walking through Montmartre and just being able to talk to myself and ask myself questions I'd been too busy to ask. And that's what Paris does for me. It gives me just like neurotic, you know, space within myself.
Well, it gives you a different perspective on your home, right? When you travel.
Yeah. And I think if you can get away from home and just start walking once you get away, I mean, I feel like the art is bound to happen.
You get a different perspective when you travel, but did you ever get reactions from people in Paris when they realized you're from America or you're from the South in America?
Yeah, I feel like they have a lot of questions, it seems. Like you're like, yeah, I'm from I'm from Nashville. And they're like, Jack Daniels. Yeah, Elvis. And I'm like, sure. Yeah, true, I guess. But yeah, they have this. And I feel like that's here too. It's also, you know, when I moved to New York when I was 19 from South Carolina, people are like, where are you from? I was like, I'm from South Carolina. And they'd just be like, start playing banjo. And it's like, no, like the South has this. That's certainly what the South has been sold as and packaged as, I think, more than anywhere else in the country. So people have this idea when they conceptualize the South, but it's like, that's not me. And I would like to share with you some of my Southern stories.
We're going to get deeper into that perspective on the South and your Southern stories in a little bit. I'm speaking with Adia Victoria of World Cafe. Right now, we're going to hear your live performance of Mean Hearted Woman from a Southern Gothic. It's Adia Victoria.
Thank you.
Recorded live for World Cafe, that was Mean Hearted Woman, a song from A Southern Gothic, the new album for my guest today, Adia Victoria. The live performances that we're hearing today, you have a whole band with you. But when you were, you know, making the actual album in some phases of it, it was a much smaller operation. You know, when you look at the credits for the record, you can see that huge chunks of the instruments were played by you and Mason Hickman. Real quick, could you tell us about Mason?
Mason is my creative partner. We've been playing together since 2013, and he is also my fiance, and we're just two kids from South Carolina that went through a plague together and got engaged and was like, hey, do you think we could maybe learn how to play a banjo a little bit? Because we didn't have our boys. Like, we didn't, I was like, let me put down a bass line. So we've always had this very openness between us. We've always just worked great as a team, even when we were just like best friends. We always joke, like, he's the Johnny Greenwood to my Tom York. Cause I'm like, oh, concepts. Let me share this art with you. And he was like, okay, let's go ahead and figure out how we can make that into reality. Cause I'm just like off on a cloud, and he's just like very much trying to help me bring my vision to life. Like, okay, how can we manifest this? So he's my manifester in chief. But yeah, like, he was, he just finished his PhD at Vanderbilt. He got his doctorate in structural engineering. We went out to Henrietta Red here in Nashville with his parents to celebrate. And then the next day the world shut down.
Oh my gosh.
So he gets his PhD, and then we're like, plague. Okay, let's make a record. So that was the past year. It was just us learning new things and tapping into our like Southern blood, like our shared Carolina history. Our families go back super long there. And I was like, I'm homesick. Let's make a record that takes me home.
Yeah.
And that's what he did.
You know, after a year or so of being in the same apartment during the pandemic, I could probably draw you the view out of my bedroom window exactly, like every building, every crack in the road, every streetlight that I stared at every single day. I understand that the view out of your bedroom window became a part of this album. So could you tell us, draw that picture for us? What were you looking at every day?
So outside of my bedroom window is my magnolia tree. And it's really big and quite an imposing presence. Like, it actually grows over our back deck. Like, its limbs are reaching towards my window, but I can't cut it. I can't stop it. And it pretty much obscures the rest of the world. Like, if I look at my window, I can see a little bit of the city, but it's mostly the magnolia. And, you know, staring at that magnolia, it kind of came alive to me, just like, it's like, it's me and you, Tree, again, today, forever. And I thought a lot about what the magnolia stood for in my life growing up in South Carolina. Like, there was always a magnolia in our front yard, wherever we moved, there was always magnolia on the property. And so that meant like so much of my young girlhood was spent underneath magnolia trees with friends from the neighborhood, my little sisters. And it was just a place where my imagination had always blossomed. And it'd been a place where I created worlds underneath magnolia trees, because the leaves became the taco, the dirt was the meat, the grass was the lettuce.
Delicious. And like,
we had a Taco Bell franchise under a tree once. But I thought about also what the magnolia stood for in Southern myth making, and it being so tied to the Confederacy, moonlight, magnolia, and all of that nonsense. And I was like, man, the magnolia is so interesting because it's been used as a tool to exclude me from my Southern heritage, but it's also been the place under which my Southern mind came to life.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I needed that magnolia when I was a little girl, and I need this tree now. So I bought a hammock, set it up under there, and just started really holding church with my magnolia tree.
Yeah, I think one thing that jumped to mind immediately when I heard Magnolia Blues, I thought of Billie Holiday mentioning the magnolia in Strange Fruit. Mm-hmm. And I've never been to the South. I'm from Toronto, Canada. And I wasn't really familiar with the symbolism of the magnolia tree. We're going to hear you perform Magnolia Blues now. What can you tell us about using an image like that, that is loaded with so much meaning when you're writing a song?
You know, I can only speak for this song, because I felt like that was a song that I wrote when I'd hit a pandemic wall. That happened to you. Like, there were certain times you're like, okay, I'm fine. And just like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
What am I going to, what new can I look at in my environment to like give me some sort of respite from reality? And that's when I started really looking at that tree, like, please get me out of the everyday, you know, save me. And so that song was the first time that I felt that about a very specific concrete thing. Like, you save me, help tree.
Well, here it is. It's here to save you if you need saving. It's Magnolia Blues, Adia Victoria on World Cafe. Adia Victoria on World Cafe performing Magnolia Blues, a song from her new album, A Southern Gothic. I'm Raina Duris, and I'm talking with Adia Victoria today. As of this conversation, you've got some shows scheduled. You're going to open for Jason Isbell at the Ryman in October. And Jason also appears on your new album along with Margot Price and several other guests. I mean, it seems to me like you're in this really exciting place as you release this record. But I would imagine that it's kind of a strange feeling coming into this space after a year of not touring, after a year of being, you know, in your house during the pandemic, and now suddenly it's like, boom, all this is happening. Like, how is that feeling?
Well, my inbox is a wreck. But, you know, it feels really, really good. I've talked about this with Margo a few times on some of our sleepovers. It's like, man, we've been in the same town for like 11 years now. We've like known each other. Like, we'd see each other out, and we'd see each other on the road and whatnot. But it was never, we never like clicked together. We never had time. And I was like, it's so weird. Like, we've known each other all this time. And finally, during a pandemic, like, we finally, like, click and, like, just, like, throw down as, like, sisters. And maybe it was just the commonality of the experience that, you know, we were going through. But it was just like, yo, man, like, both of our egos are currently dead.
How do you mean?
How
like
you
just...
doing?
Yeah.
But that's been, like, seriously, like, that's been everyone that I've come across, all my musician buddies and even people I've never met or never reached out to, because I was like, oh, they wouldn't want to talk to me. But like, I've just been like fearless over the course of the pandemic. Like, you are going through some, so am I. Let's make some music together. And don't tell me you're busy, because you're not.
Yeah.
You're doing the same thing. You're sitting around your house wearing weird pants. Let's make some art. And so I just kind of did that.
I mean, you've got a great point. It's like one of those things where, you know, people would be like, we're all in this together, and it could feel a little like, okay, sure. But then at the same time, you're like, well, we actually all just went through this thing. It kind of collapses these like hierarchies we think we have in our heads, right? About who you can talk to and when.
Everyone's approachable now. It's like, but I feel, you know, carrying that energy out, I want to keep that weirdness. One of my favorite writers, Southern writers, Casey Lehman, he tweeted a while ago, he was like, it would be a real shame if we didn't come out of this pandemic a lot weirder.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but I was like, yeah, I don't think I got weird. I think I became me, you know, that I feel like I became this part of myself that I always thought that I had to like manage out in the world. Like, you have to look like this, or like, come across like this. And, you know, you spend so much time polishing your surfaces in the real world. We did in the before times, like, we lost who we intrinsically were. And I feel like sitting at home in your own funk for like months at a time, you have to get to know that person. And if you, I feel like if you resist that person, I feel like those are the people that struggle most with quarantine, of just like, oh, I don't like what I'm seeing. It's like, no, that's me. And I realized that everyone else is probably going through this too. So what better time to reach out with someone and ask to collaborate on making art? It's like, let's harness this weirdness.
Yeah.
What is aware?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you just kind of touched on this, but I was going to ask you, you know, I've read that you said of your new album that it's a timestamp of where you were in 2020. And at first I was like, I feel like this is a year that a lot of people may not want to commemorate 2020, right? But why did you want to mark it?
Because, and I don't want this to sound terrible, but it probably will. This felt like the first year I was actually alive. Like, it felt like the first year since I had been a child, where I felt raw and exposed. And I felt like the life that I was living before, so many people around me appeared to have control and appeared to know like trajectories and like, this is a 5-year goal and plan for your career. And, da, 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 da. And like, just being so cavalier with the future, so cavalier with the idea that they knew what was going on. And having to, you know, swim amongst those kind of people, it's like soul crushing. You lose some of the mystery of life I felt like we had before. And 2020, for whatever the heck, it was mysterious. It was like, what are we? That's why I wanted to capture it. You know, so many of these songs I wrote in my head while working at Amazon, wearing a mask and, you know, seeing coworkers stop and cry because they're terrified they're gonna take the virus home to their kid with asthma, you know? And it's like, this is some real. Like, I felt like 2020 was a year you got to look behind the curtain and see how the sausage gets made. And I needed to make a documentary of that with my songs and not try and pretend I was somewhere else in some enchanted forest, you know, whatever. It's like, no, I'm like actually out here in a plague and I can't get away from it.
Yeah. I think some people might be surprised that you work at Amazon as well. I mean, you were featured on a Spotify playlist not too long ago, and you typed up a letter in response, and you mentioned in it, you can't eat exposure, rightly.
I've tried.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, as an artist who I think, you know, your career is really like getting rolling, you're in this community of musicians in Nashville, and I think people might perceive from the outside certain things about what your life is like. What do you feel are misconceptions you think people have about what artists' lives are like right now?
I mean, I don't know because I don't ask.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't care. I know that we don't talk about our day jobs and stuff because we're trying to give the illusion that we're living in like this, I'm living in my mood board, my vision. Like I am this person all the time that I present to you in my art. And for me, it's just like, I've never found a comfortable way to hide away in a persona.
Yeah.
I've never found an image that I could like squeeze press myself into. And I just decided to be honest with people since I started my career. Like I was washing dishes, you know, the day that I signed my contract with Atlantic, I was washing scrambled eggs off dishes. And I need people to understand, give me the grace to be something bigger than what they think I am for my records. And I think that so much of doing what I do is about creating like a cultic mythic figure that people can really collapse their lives inside of and follow you. But I didn't want that. I never wanted people to follow an image or an idea of me. I wanted them to know, like, yes, I do make music, but I also have a whole life that informs that music and is separate from that music. And I can't give that up to sell more records or become a more popular consumable brand. It's like, that's just not what I do.
I think that kind of ties nicely into the last song that we're going to hear. I'm speaking with Adia Victoria on World Cafe. The last song we're going to hear you perform is not on your new album. It's one you released back in August 2020. There were a lot of socially minded songs that came out around that time, but yours really stuck out to me because it is complicated. It's nuanced. It's angry, but it's loving at the same time. And throughout this interview, you've actually mentioned the word creepy a couple of times. I feel like it kind of, I wouldn't have said creepy, but I would have said haunting. Could you tell us about writing South Gotta Change?
Well, it was very hot that day. And that kind of went into it. It was a few days after John Lewis passed. And I remember just feeling it was one of those pandemic walls I hit. It was right after George Floyd had been lynched. And, you know, you're still going through the pandemic. And it's just like this heat feels like it's eating me. Like it feels like the air is trying to swallow me. And then I thought about my frustrations that I've had with the South growing up here, because you feel, you know, as a Black person in the South, you feel gaslit all the time. And you're surrounded by so much insanity. It's like the South is like this sick family member. You're just like, why are you doing this? Why are you putting so much energy into your madness? And you want to like lovingly strangle it to death. Like, why? And I just reached like the end of my rope of just asking why? And I thought about talking to a loved one who you see is like running from themselves and destroying themselves. And how would you talk to that person? Me loving you isn't lying to you and helping you keep up this facade. And I thought about John Lewis when he talked about getting in good trouble. And I said, what does that mean, good trouble? And I thought, the biggest trouble that my people have gotten into has been for telling our stories, for telling the truth. You have your tongue cut out for it. And what is more radical than honestly sharing your story with a society that's tried to silence you? Like, obviously, there is something powerful enough in your story that they would go through all of this effort to silence you. And that's what John Lewis understood. He understood that the quiet kills. It kills Black people, kill white folk too. Kill them worse than it kills us. So writing South Gotta Change was just me being like, can tell your story as bad as it's been, but it's no way near as brutal as the ghost you've made that's driving you crazy in your own head. Just stop. So that was South Gotta Change. I was real hot and really irritable.
Well, thank you for, you know, telling the story and toughing it out through that heat to write this song. This is South Gotta Change, Adia Victoria.
You've been running.
torn a life for so long. You're a stranger to yourself. You're all dressed up in make-believe just to be somebody else. So listen closely when I sing that the truth would set you free. Yeah, I stood up to the mountain, told the mountain, say my name. And if you're tired of walking, let the children.
On World Cafe, a live performance of South Gotta Change from Adia Victoria. She's been my guest today. And I didn't want to mention this earlier, Adia, because we were talking about some pretty serious stuff, but I can't help but notice it sounds like there are some adorable meows happening in the background that I need to know more about.
I tried to shut these cats up. I tried so hard, but I've spoiled
them. How many
them.
Are there?
Right now, I am down to six.
Down seven. To six?
Seven.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So my cat Shelby Foot, she had five kittens this summer. We gave one away to my cousin. So I've got the four girls left, and I've got my cat Nancy, Shelby, and Dot. So that's seven. And then Bot, but he lives outside.
So is this the kind of thing where I should mention at the end a sort of a public service announcement? If you're looking to adopt a cat, get in touch with World Cafe and we can maybe talk to Adia Victoria for you if you're in the Nashville area.
Yeah, probably, but I don't think I can give any away.
Adia, thank you so much. It's been really, really great talking to you.
Cheers. Thank you, Raina.
I'm Raina Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.